All right. Is there anything we need to talk about other than the fact that the show is going to be all follow-up?
The other things we have to talk about, what is it, like Apple TV and all that business, that'll keep because it's all just rumors. So we should just get, if we just end up doing follow-up and stuff, that's fine.
Nintendo.
Yeah, and I think that will keep too, I think, because also nothing is happening in there. It's just an announcement, but we'll get to one of those. Don't worry about it is what I'm saying, because all the other stuff that we think is news isn't really news. It's all just future news.
How does Nintendo basically get bought by the world and we don't talk about it this week?
Get bought by the world?
I mean, they're basically selling out. Like, they're admitting defeat.
The reason I said it'll keep is because it's a press release and an announcement. It's not a thing, a product, you know?
We'll talk about it. I think it signifies something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. But what I'm saying is it will keep. If we talk about it next week, nothing new will have happened between this week and next week related to that story. It's not as if, anyway, we'll get to it.
Our entire podcast this week should be discussing like this, like before we're actually going to say anything about a topic, just talking about what we're not going to say and what we're going
to
say.
Doesn't matter. We go in order. We go from top to bottom.
Oh, God.
Follow forward.
Follow up. Follow out. Follow in.
Follow casting.
We have a lot of follow up today, and it starts with our tipster having a compatriot. This compatriot said, back to the hub. This was in the middle of an email. It's real and it's coming, just not as soon as the tipster thought. It'll probably come when the MacBook Pros are announced, whenever that may be.
Right. So the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro has not been updated yet for Broadwell and does not have the Force Touch trackpad yet. Presumably, it will be updated sometime later this year, possibly the summer, because right now, the only reason it wasn't updated yet, as far as we know, is because the quad-core Broadwell chips aren't actually out from Intel yet. My question on this device is whether they're going to actually just skip that entirely and go and wait for Skylake. Because if Skylake is on schedule, which it theoretically is, then Skylake quad-core chips can't be that much further off. And with the Skylake chipset, not only do you get faster CPU performance, but you also get new RAM types. And the big thing would be you get Thunderbolt 3. And then that means you could drive a 5K external display if there was one.
Saying this is the curse of the pro suffix, that machines that have a pro suffix eventually skip Intel chip generations?
Well, yeah. Well, when Intel messes up their entire consumer lineup for an entire year, Intel always messes up and delays the Xeon. That's no big deal. And in fact, there are new Xeons for the Mac Pro, and Apple's not using them. They're skipping a Xeon generation. I don't know why, but they are. Yeah, for the MacBook Pro, I would expect 15-inch to be this summer with either Broadwell or Skylake. The timing works out that if they can wait until probably late summer, I think they can get Skylake, and that would certainly be a better update.
But as you said, Intel is very often late-ish with their... So, like, don't you think the Skylake will inevitably be a little bit later than we think it's going to be as well?
Well, the issue with Broadwell was the die shrink and getting the 14-nanometer process to have usable yields. But Skylake is a microarchitecture change, so it's not related to the yield issue. So Intel is claiming, and they're still claiming this even recently, they are claiming that even though Broadwell was extremely late, that Skylake will actually not be late, which means Skylake is shipping in the second half of this year.
Yeah, could be.
Like, Broadwell's actually intentionally going to be a really short generation. So the only question is, what does Apple and what do the other PC manufacturers do with that? Do they actually make Broadwell products en masse, or do they just make a handful, like what Apple has done, and wait until Skylake for their higher-end stuff, where it'll make more of a difference? And I think if Thunderbolt 3 is right around the corner, it would be unfortunate to have a 15-inch MacBook Pro update like months before you can get Thunderbolt 3 chipsets.
You're assuming they'll have Thunderbolt 4 ports on them.
I think they would.
This new tipster, the friend of the tipster, says that the updated Pros will have more than one port. Now, that does not by necessity mean it will have Thunderbolt, of course, but apparently there will be at least more than one, John, and so you can finally relax and be happy.
Well, the context of that was it will have more than one USB-C port.
Right.
The number of other ports was not specified, but I'm thinking Thunderbolt is not dead. I'm thinking Thunderbolt continues on much like FireWire 800 did for so long, because it continues on in the high-end products where, like, the typical things people would plug a drive into a laptop for, you don't really need Thunderbolt for most people's needs. So it's fine if the low-end laptops don't have Thunderbolt anymore. That's not a huge deal, especially something like this ultra-portable. And keep in mind, the new Airs still do. You can still get an 11 and 13-inch Air or a 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro with Thunderbolt. So it still goes down to the 11-inch Air. I mean, that's pretty good coverage right there. So anyway, Thunderbolt is fine. It'll be here for a long time. So it is still worth it, especially considering like the high-end stuff like the Mac Pro and everything. It is still worth it for Apple to invest in Thunderbolt, to support it fully, and to issue Thunderbolt 3 when it comes out.
Yeah, I didn't remember seeing this email. I didn't put it in the follow-up, and people in the chat room were complaining about this, and I agree with the complaints. Where does this come from? Why does it get to be in the follow-up? Why do we believe this person?
I just thought it was interesting that somebody else apparently tried to double down on behalf of the original person.
Yeah, I could have written this email.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start writing plausible things into our email form and see if you two are suckered into putting it into the show notes. Maybe I've already done that and I'll reveal it in a year.
That is a long, long troll. But yeah, if that would make you happy, John, to ruin your own show, feel free.
The tipster's been in the house the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. All right. What are we moving on to? Oh, see, this was out of order. We should have started with this top one because the top one was a accidental neutral follow-up. We're talking about the Apple Watch and the potential for it to gain value as a sort of collectible piece of electronics. Like I tweeted about this and I almost tweeted the wrong thing and now I can only remember the wrong thing. It's not Summer Games, it's Sports Championship. Someone in the chat room will tell me that super rare NES cart that goes for a lot of money these days that starts with the letter S. I think it's Sports Champions, or maybe it's the Nintendo World Champion card. Anyway, if you got an original Apple Watch, and especially as Marco pointed out, if they don't make any more of the original Apple Watch Edition, and they don't make any more of these gold ones after that, which seems unlikely to me, but hey, it could happen, then it could be worth more than you paid for it in the somewhat distant future, purely based on its rarity. Nintendo World Championships, the chat room says, is that rare card. So anyway, one of the things I threw out there related to that is, say, you know, very expensive sports cars that they only make a few of. Like if you had bought the McLaren F1, I said it was really expensive, but now it goes for a lot more than you would have paid for it. And I threw out some numbers. I think I threw out like 250 grand and now they're like in the millions or something. And I was way off. I think I was going for the 250 or maybe 232 because I was thinking of the max speed of the McLaren F1 from back in the day. But TBI Rally Sport on Twitter gave us the correct numbers. The McLaren F1 was originally $960,000, so not cheap, because that was in, what, 1990-something dollars? Mm-hmm. And they currently go for around $10 million now. And I recently saw a white one, the only white McLaren F1 ever made, going for $14 million. So if you had invested $1 million in a McLaren F1 in the 90s, you would have got a 10x return on your investment if it didn't kill you.
I'm not sure I would take that deal. Like, buy a white car for 10 years and then sell it? I don't know.
Well, it was the only white one. It's all about rarity.
Yeah.
Not the pony.
I think there's a reason they only made one.
I know you're trying to mess with me, but there is a reason they only made one. It's that it looks terrible.
It doesn't look that bad. I mean, it is generally a nice-looking car. It's a couple of awkward things about it. Like, the rear overhang is really small, so it kind of looks clipped in that way. But yeah, like I said, you get the car in white. If it's a really nice shape, it can still look good. McLaren F1 almost pulls it off.
Almost. I don't know. It does not look great in my personal estimation. And according to Marco, I like everything that is white ever.
Well, you just happen to have bought all of your cars in white. And each time it just kind of happened to you.
No, the only time, there are two times I've bought cars on my own. And one time it was deliberate, one time it was not. Everything else, it was a hand-me-down. And Marco, you had something from Ed Ryan.
Yes. Last week, we talked about Bluetooth headphones. And, you know, we were talking in the context of Apple eliminating the headphone jack from their stuff eventually and switching over to requiring Bluetooth headphones for everything and what that would mean. My main complaints about it were that of not only complexity, but also battery life. That there's, you know, then you have this other thing that has to be charged and everything. We got a lot of good feedback on this. Some of it came from the hearing aid world, because they have a similar set of problems with hearing aids of you want to make something as small as possible that can pump sound into your ears, but that also has good battery life. And hearing aids manage pretty impressive battery life these days, especially the high-end ones, but there are, from what I understand, some pretty substantial costs associated with that. I don't know much more about it than that, But it seems like that might be an indicator of what's possible in the not necessarily close future, but what is possible with like the cutting edge battery technology and miniaturization of headphone type things. But a number of other issues were pointed out specifically about Bluetooth headphones. The biggest one, which I had totally forgotten about, is latency. A lot of Bluetooth headphones, and it seems like this might differ per model or maybe per application or something. This seems like it's inconsistent. And I've seen this myself, where it's better or worse with some. Latency is a big problem when you're watching videos, or, of course, anything that requires really up-to-date sound to match what's on screen, there to be no latency or, you know, inaudibly short latency. I have found with all the Bluetooth headphones I've tried, when I did like a little roundup with I think four or five of them, and I found the latency was noticeably bad on all of them enough that like playing a video on an iPhone, I didn't try it on a Mac, but playing a video from an iPhone was just unbearably annoying because the latency was extremely noticeable. So, you know, it was out of sync. The audio was out of sync with the video.
I would just like to put it on record that I use really cheap, really crappy Bluetooth headphones with my Mac for 9 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I have never noticed any latency issues. And these are not fancy headphones. They are made by a brand called Arctic, which I've never heard of before. I've never bought any of their other products. And either one of two things is true. Either the latency on these just happens to be wonderful in short, or I'm just not picky enough to notice. And if it's the latter, then let this be a lesson, kids, that being fussy about headphones and coffee and about everything else under the sun maybe isn't the best thing in the world. Anyway, carry on, Marco.
Anyway, and by the way, as I said last week, I use Bluetooth headphones when I'm walking. I listen to podcasts on them. They're fantastic. And in that context, they're way better than wired headphones. I love them. I use the Sennheiser PX... I think it's the 120 BT. I'll link to it in the show notes. It's like $100, and they're great. They sound like complete garbage for music. And a lot of people are saying Bluetooth audio, because it uses lossy compression codecs, there's a lot of arguments that Bluetooth headphones sound bad because they're Bluetooth. I've tested, in the ones I've tested, most of them offer the ability to plug in a cable. So I've tested them in both modes, cabled mode direct and Bluetooth mode. And they sound equally bad in both modes. So the reason they sound bad is not because they're Bluetooth necessarily, it's because they're bad headphones. And it is possible to make decent sounding Bluetooth headphones. Now, a lot of people say, oh, these new headphones support aptX, this new codec, the aptX. I don't know if it's pronounced aptX, but that's how I say it. The problem is that iPhones don't support aptX. So I see these like Amazon reviews of these headphones that say these new headphones support aptX and it sounds great for my iPhone. It's way better than the previous headphones. Well, they might sound better, but it's not because of the aptX codec, because if you're using them on an iPhone, aptX is not being used. All that being said, we got a very good email from Josh DeLioncourt. At Lioncourt on Twitter. And Josh says, one other use case that wasn't mentioned in your discussion, but perhaps should have been, is that of voiceover users. I'm a writer and developer. I spend virtually all day on my MacBook, iPad, and iPhone plugged into headphones. Bluetooth not only comes with the battery life issue, which is compounded by constant use by voiceover users, but also, in my experience, latency. It's tough enough that a voiceover user must listen to everything. Even the slightest amount of latency in audio can lead to frustration and disruption of productivity. I'd imagine this is very analogous to when Tux UI suffers from lag. So yeah, that I could definitely see why that would be a problem.
All right. So we should at least briefly touch on the Apple Watch Edition pricing. There's been a lot of chatter that Tim Cook was perhaps embarrassed about the price of the watch. It didn't show up on any slides, and he kind of just said, oh, yeah, and it's $10,000. So anyway.
Now, there will be limited quantities of the Apple Watch Edition. It is priced from $10,000, and it will be available in select retail stores. The Apple Watch Edition is the most beautiful expression of the Apple Watch.
So there's an article in the show notes that I did not read, and I'm assuming, John, you put it here.
I did. I don't remember what's in this article either. I didn't open it in one of my tabs. I'm sorry. But
maybe you did and you lost it.
I opened up the tabs right before the show and closed them all after the show, as you well know.
God.
I remember hearing about this before I saw the presentation, because I didn't watch it live, right? And so I knew to pay attention during sort of that section of the thing to see if these articles that I had heard about were on the nose. And there's two things I noted about Tim Cook and the Apple Watch Edition, the pricing thing and the presentation. One, he made a comment earlier in the presentation, I believe, when they were doing the health section about his heart rate, you know, sort of doing the jokey kind of thing that I guess, I'm not going to say non-professional, but like less experienced public speakers, or maybe, yeah, I think so. Like less experienced public speakers will add something to their presentation that acknowledges the fact that they're nervous to sort of, you know, cut the tension, to get the audience on their side and to relax them and to just sort of go forward together so we don't have to, so it's not awkward, right? Tim Cook did that in this presentation when he was showing the heart rate thing. It's like,
you can even check your heart rate. And this is clearly not mine at this point in time.
This is not Tim Cook's first presentation. We assume that there's some baseline level of nervousness that everyone feels when they're doing a big important presentation. We assume they're all nervous about things. But if he was going to be nervous about something, you would think he would be nervous about the revealing of the Apple Watch and not this presentation. So what I was thinking about is, all right, what is it about this presentation, which really is just going over stuff we already knew and adding detail to the Apple Watch? What is he nervous about in this one? And that ties into when he got to the Apple Watch edition. And he has to say, the Apple Watch edition starts at $10,000 and will be available in select blah, 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 blah. And he just like ate those words. Like he didn't look down at his shoes and mumble them, but he might as well have. Like he did not muster up a bunch of fake enthusiasm saying the Apple Watch edition is really great. It's available starting at $10,000. And it was low key. There was no slide. There wasn't a lot of time given to it. He didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for the announcement. Is that what he was talking about with his heart right now? I'm sure he's nervous when he does all his presentations. Maybe it's not a natural thing for him. Maybe they're not connected. But whether they're connected or not, the way the pricing of the Apple Watch Edition was dealt with in that presentation, at the very least, shows that Apple thinks that the audience it was communicating to in that keynote is not really the same audience that's going to buy this watch. The information has to get out there. It has to be in the press and so on and so forth. But it's a different set of people. It's not the tech press that was invited to this thing, although I'm sure they invited all the fashion people and everything as well. I put in the things, was Tim Cook embarrassed about the 10K watch? I don't know if he was embarrassed, but he definitely didn't seem as excited about the Apple Watch edition and its price as he was about other things. And I guess what you could do is make a little clip and say, let's show him saying the Apple Watch starts at $349. Does he say that with more or less enthusiasm? Maybe he always says pricing in a boring way, and that's all he had to say about the edition. I don't know. But to me, it seemed like this product does not sit comfortably in the same sort of keynote presentation style that we're accustomed to from Apple, and that it, as in so many other things, that it needs some other venue, in the same way that it's going to need some other venue for sales, like select stores, a special room they go to, a different kind of treatment from the people selling you the watch, like the different box that it comes in. Like everything about it is different from other Apple products. And I don't know. Did you guys notice that when you were watching this presentation? Because it really stood out to me. I mean, maybe I was primed to look for it, I guess. But
I noticed it, but I wouldn't say it was loud, so to speak, and it's a poor choice of words in this context, but it wasn't the sort of thing that knocked me off my chair. But I did notice he seemed to kind of brush by it quickly. I don't know, Marco, what did you think?
Yeah, it basically just that it very clearly that he rushed through it. It was not, I don't think it was necessarily nervousness. And I don't think it was necessarily him not being excited about it. You know, that's just his style of speaking. I think he really just rushed through it, and that part was intentional. That they did not want to really spend a lot of time on that, because you know you could tell. You know, there was a good discussion about this on the talk show last week with Gruber and Matthew Panzerino. They kind of think that maybe there's some debate inside the company about whether this should even exist. Certainly, it's uncharted territory for the company. I think in order to try to minimize how much this would alienate their existing customer base, or their most of their customer base that is not buying this thing and that can't or at least won't buy it, I think in order to just minimize the alienation there and minimize the appearance of being this new snobby company, I think that's why they didn't give a lot of time. So I don't think it necessarily reflects what Tim thinks about it or whether Tim was nervous about it. I think it's really just about just making sure that it wasn't distracting from the from the other parts of the presentation, like the other prices being pretty reasonable.
Well, that's the other. That's what he could possibly, in theory, be nervous about. Like the idea that the entire conversation about this product that he's clearly very excited about could get derailed talking about this one low volume version of this product. And that ties into the other sort of vague rumor story narrative. The idea that Johnny Ive really likes expensive watches. Mark Newson really likes expensive watches. And as sort of a perk to the two of them, to Johnny, essentially saying, stay with Apple, make this watch for us. We'll let you make a ridiculously expensive one because we know you really like that. And it may seem silly that personal considerations like that, if they're even true, like, again, we don't know. This is all just rumors, right? But imagining for a second that this was the case, that Johnny Ive really likes expensive watches, the idea that the world's biggest company would do something like have a special low volume version of its product to satisfy the person designing the product seems crazy and weird, just because it seems like are the whims of this one person dictating an entire product line by Apple. But it's not weird. Like when Steve Jobs was alive, the whims of an even more mercurial, as they used to say back in the 80s, person was dictating the whims of the world's biggest company. So that's the way people work. That's the way people deal with each other. I don't think it's out of the question that, you know, I haven't listened to that episode of the talk show yet, but like that there could be an internal debate about what kind of company does Apple want to be? How is this product different from a $10,000 Mac Pro? Well, it's different for these ways and that way. You know, like we talked about all these things before, right? I can imagine that same conversation going on inside the company. And I can also imagine ending up in the current situation where they make a $10,000 gold watch because one faction of the company really likes $10,000 gold watches.
Yeah, I don't know. Johnny is worth keeping around, so if anyone could pull it off, it'd be him, but it's weird.
I mean, I don't think it's like just to satisfy him, but like, you know, if there is a multiple factions inside the company among the decision makers, it's reasonable to think that the side that won could include a very important person like Johnny Ive, who's into that. Or maybe that's what it took to get Mark Newson to come to the company, and Johnny really wanted Mark to come. Like, anyway, you can make up all sorts of stories about this, but like, I think it's notable in that I can't remember the last time, unless a product is something like a compromise or sort of a boring product or a not interesting thing, then they gloss over it, or maybe it doesn't even make it to the keynote, like the new Mac Pro that wasn't really new and stuff like that. Yeah, that'd expect, right? And everything's done. But this is like the top of the line, fanciest version of the product that Apple is just super excited about, right? And so it's weird for this one to be like, oh, and by the way, this is the watch edition, is for rich people, it's $10,000, never mind, right? That was weird.
I mean, I think it just shows how much the edition really is, I think, an experiment from Apple. You know, I don't think when they initially conceived the watch that they were like, all right, we're going to have three versions, you know, cheap, normal, and gold. Like, I don't think it went like that.
Well, I think, I mean, as Monk Bent in the chat room was pointing out, like, when we were talking about the watch, if they decide to make a watch, they have to have the conversation about how is this different than everything else we made? How do our products change once we ask people to wear them? And no, putting an iPod shuffler on your neck doesn't count, right? How does it change? We have to address it differently. And if you're going to make a watch and we're not going to sell $10 plastic watches, we're going to sell mid-range watches. And like I said, watches go up to this high end. Why would we not make a watch like that? And then it gets into like, well, it's the same as the other watch. You're just making it out of fancy materials. Like, yes, that's something people do with watches. Why? Because people want gold. Why do they want gold things? Why do we get to do a 500% markup? It's like, it's just the way it works.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, I wrote in my blog post right before the event, thinking that it would be cheaper, but oh well. I wrote in that you know, the point of Apple Watch is to get people to wear it first, and then do all this other stuff. Like, it's if you can't get people to wear it, then all the other work you do is pointless. And there are certain people who the only kind of watch they're going to be seen wearing is something that's expensive and made of gold. You know, and that's for various reasons that are, you know, we can disagree with them or not think the same way, but people have those reasons. So if they want people like celebrities and really rich people who like fancy jewelry, like if they want them to wear an Apple Watch at all, they have to make a gold one. You know, like it, like there's, and certainly there's some of it, you know, being this, you know, this very profitable fashion world kind of thing and being prestigious. But, you know, I think most of it is just that, just the goal of, we need to make something that nobody can look at and say, well, that's too dorky to wear. That's not good enough for me to wear.
And if Apple's going to do this, which they clearly are, like I think they made the right call. Like, I think this is not a boondoggle for Johnny Ive. I think more or less he was right. But I think the company has to now become comfortable with the idea that this is the type of thing they sell. You wouldn't see Rolex like mumbling over the pricing of its new fancy watch.
No, they just don't tell you.
Yeah, well, you know, the horsepower is adequate, right? Like, that's either way, like, however you handle it, either you don't mention the price, like, if you have to ask, you can't afford it, like, whatever. Apple needs to figure out, how do you present products like this? Because they are making a product like this, and it's probably a good call for them to make a product like this. They just have to figure out, as a company, how do you present it? Because I think you have to present it differently than the new MacBook or, you know, a traditional technology product.
And speaking of the addition, there was an omission during the keynote, not an awkward flyby, but a straight up omission. And that was the video about gold. We saw a video about aluminum. We saw a video about steel, but we didn't see a video about gold. But apparently such a video exists. They just didn't play it during the keynote. So that strikes me as slightly odd. Although, since most of the audience of that presentation is in both in person and in general is probably not going to be buying an edition, it's not terribly remarkable to me that they didn't show that video during the presentation, but I don't know.
Can you imagine if they did, like, so if they did show that video, it could have just been cut for time or whatever, but imagine they did show it. I can imagine, given the population of that room, despite the fact that I'm sure Apple invited people from Vogue and all these other fashion magazines that I don't know the names of, I'm sure they were in the audience too, but we know that a lot of the audience are technology, you know, media, right? I can imagine a little bit of weird, uncomfortable tittering from the audience when this gold thing is playing. Like, because for the same reason that the nerd tech press is kind of like totally willing to see like CNC milling machines grinding away at aluminum and ooh and aahing over asymmetrical fan blades and stuff like that, that's what the tech press likes. Once you start showing gold, I think they feel like they're going out of their comfort zone. And, you know, with Johnny Ive talking in flowery terms about the gold they have and how it's a beautiful metal and blah, blah, blah. Like, it feels uncomfortable because you're like, this is not engineering. This is not technology. This is merely fashion, right? And it just, I think it would have been fine probably, but I can imagine if I was there in person, you wouldn't have heard it on the slides. But if you were there in person, a couple of weird tisks, or at the very least, the media deciding that that's the time they're going to check their Twitter, right? When the gold video comes up.
No, I think it's very simple. I think it's that they wanted to not spend a lot of time on the gold pricing. And so they just blew right by the whole gold section of the presentation. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. It wasn't worth the time. They didn't want people to be focused on that. They wanted people to be focused on the other stuff.
And, I know, but I think that's a problem for the company, like that they have to figure out. They have to get comfortable themselves and decide. I mean, we just have one data point now, so you don't know. But they have to figure out how do we deal with this? How do we deal with the vast gulf between the product lines? Because they make future products like this, like the Apple, you know, monocle, the Apple ring, like whatever the heck they're going to do with wearable tech in the future. They have to figure it out. They have to just sort of come up with a policy, and then until it comes routine, and we sort of, you know, expect that they're either aren't going to talk about the super expensive one, or when they do, they're going to do it in this way, or they aren't going to mention the price and all that business.
Well, the good thing is our first sponsor this week is a much better deal than an Apple Watch edition.
Nice.
It is our friends at Fracture. Fracture prints your photos in vivid color directly on glass. Go to fractureme.com for more info here. Fracture photos are beautiful. They put everything you need to hang them up right in the box. They ship to you, I believe, for free, if not for a very good price. Their prices are incredibly reasonable. You can get a 5x5-inch print for just $15, and the prices are very reasonable going up from there. Every Fracture is handmade and checked for quality by a small team of real human beings in Gainesville, Florida. Fracture prints are the thinnest, lightest, and most elegant ways to display your favorite photos. As I always say when I do these reads, I have Fracture prints all over my house, all over my office. I use that small 5x5 square size to do my app icons. Which is nice. You get like a nice print of an icon that you've made for an app that you've made, and it's like a nice trophy, like a real life representation of something that you've done in the, you know, software world. It's all virtual, and you don't usually get like a physical artifact. It's very nice. If you do that, they're actually just if you get one of these, take a picture of it, and they are trying to collect a gallery of everyone's app icon fractures. So post your picture on Twitter or Instagram with a photo of your app icon fractures and the hashtag fractured app, and they will contact you to get your app in the gallery. Get 15% off your first order with coupon code ATP15. So go to fractureme.com, coupon code ATP15. I cannot recommend these things enough. I mean, you know, first of all, you don't have to get them framed. That's the biggest thing for me is, like, it is its own frame. You know, it's a piece of glass printed edge to edge. And the glass is nice and thin. And there's, like, a little thin bit of foam board behind it so you can put a picture hanger into it. But the glass itself is very, very thin, which is great because then it's light. You don't have to worry about this thing, like, ripping the drywall out of your wall and falling and breaking on the floor. They're very lightweight. It is, in my opinion, it is the most practical way to get a photo, big or small, printed and hung up somewhere on the wall or put in your desk. Really, really great. I love fractures. I have 6 of them within view right now, and I'm looking into a corner, so that's pretty good. So 6 of them within view and all different sizes, and yeah, just love them. Go to fractureme.com, use coupon code ATP15, get your photos printed directly in vivid color directly on glass. Thanks a lot to Fracture for sponsoring our show once again.
So we have approximately 6 hours of MacBook follow-up.
Oh my God.
I don't think it's that bad. We talked about most of these things. It's just filling in little gaps. Cause we spent a long time last show talking about the new MacBook's limitations, and pros and cons and blah, blah, blah. And here are the things that we didn't get to, or that have had new bits of information about. The first one is about the flash in the new MacBook. Apparently it's really, really fast, which is nice. I've linked to this Bare Feats benchmarking, showing that if you get the new MacBook, the flash storage is actually faster than the big black tube Mac Pro's flash storage, which is a hell of a bargain if you consider the price of the big Mac Pro.
Yeah, I think they made PCI Express faster on this chipset. I think that's one of the sources of this gain.
Yeah, and maybe different flash chips or whatever. It's just, you know, technology marches on. Flash is a relatively young technology, but we're in a weird situation now where actually if you get this pretty much, you know, bottom of the line, close to bottom of the line Apple notebook, you will get really fast flash storage, which is nice and hopefully bodes well for future big tube Mac Pros and other products.
Yeah, I would expect as everything gets the updated chipsets, you know, over the coming year, I would expect them to all have the same things, basically.
No word yet on trim support or whether we need that anymore, or whether it's handled by the firmware or some cooperation with the OS. Like, people are always asking about that because I got the Samsung 850 Pro SSD. I have not done the crazy hack to enable trim support. And I'm just going to say, like, you know, you just handle it. I know there's nothing magical that the firmware on the thing can do to make up for the fact that the OS is not telling the hardware which blocks are unused, but I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to keep a reasonable amount of space free on it. I haven't probably filled all of the space with real or deleted files yet. If the performance drops off a cliff on my SSD, I'll be sure to let you guys know. But so far, I'm doing okay. And I just hope I don't want to have to think about that. And I also don't want to be in any unsupported configurations. But I know a lot of people do the hacks to enable trim support, and they seem okay with it, too. So, you know, do whatever you got to do. But so far, so good. And I'm just happy to see storage getting faster. Because, you know, although SSD, once you go all SSD, then you're just like, okay, how much faster can flash go? Why is it so slow? Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, just you.
All right.
You know, if you got a more modern computer, you'd have faster buses and everything.
I know. I was thinking about that the other day. It's like, boy, 7 years, we're a 7-year-old, I'm using a 7-year-old computer. Can I make it to using a 10-year-old computer? Like,
I mean, at this point, you might as well try if you're this close.
No, I'm going to buy the first one that comes that, you know, fulfills my requirements.
It never will.
Yeah. Good. Don't hold your breath.
That's, so you'll definitely reach 10 years as long as this still works.
No. I was the current Mac Pro, I would have gotten it if it was like half the price.
Here's a question. If something critical died on your current one today, what would you buy to replace it?
I would probably be forced to get the iMac that you have.
That must be excruciating for you.
No, I would not like it because it would be like, I know this is just a stepping stone machine, and you know the graphics, the whole graphics performance and the overheating and whatever. Like, I love the screen and everything, but it'd be just like a way station on my way to getting something better later. I don't know. I'm hanging there. It's hanging in there.
By the way, whatever it's worth, a graphics performance, I don't know how it compares by gaming standards, but I have not had any heating problems.
And you're not playing games on this. This is all just about game benchmarks.
That's fair. But I mean, like when Tiff was playing, I mean, I think we were only playing Portal 2, so it wasn't really stressing it that much, but it was...
How old is Portal 2? It's like a 7-year-old game, I think.
Yeah, but when playing Portal 2, the fan did spin up to what I would consider medium speed, and it sustained at that level, and it was never really a problem. It was never obnoxiously loud. It was audible, but it was not obnoxiously loud, nor did it ever overheat or seem to like throttle itself in any noticeable way.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed it in a game like that, because that GPU will just eat Portal 2 for lunch. Like, you're just, it's, I don't think it's a problem, but I want that little tube. I want it to be quiet like the little tube. I want it to be powerful like the tube. I just want it to not cost a hajillion dollars, and I could give up one of the GPUs probably.
And that's the problem, that I don't think they will ever ship that machine.
I know. Well, anyway, I'm just waiting patiently to see what I can see. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe the next 5K iMac, they resolve some of they put a different GPU in there or pick a different vendor. Like, they're always changing things. So I'm in the meantime, my SSD has really extended the life of this computer. It feels much snappier than it used to. So I'm okay for now, as long as nothing breaks. What's the next one? The next one is about, we talked about the keyboard having a symmetrical rectangular outline, because Johnny Ive doesn't want to bump out the outline for the arrow keys to have an inverted T with full size keys in there.
We have follow up on this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talked about it on the show and I said, but look at the keyboard. You notice something on there that is a step in the right direction for Johnny Ive accepting asymmetry. And I acknowledge that there's always asymmetrical stuff on keyboards. But in this model in particular, because the trackpad is jammed right up against the space bar, and because the left edge of the space bar was aligned with the left edge of the trackpad, it really emphasized the fact that the space bar is not centered on this keyboard. And then I had to deal with, you know, a week and a half of people telling me the space bar is never centered on the keyboards. Yes, I know it's never centered. But because there's always like a buffer, there had been historically a buffer between the trackpad and the space bar, it wasn't just in your face so much. But on this particular model, because they're just touched right up against each other, and because the left edges are aligned, it really emphasizes the fact that the right edge is not aligned. And someone tweeted at me, who was this? Shane Bonham tweeted, "How hard do you think it was to talk Johnny Ive out of this?" And he shows a picture that he mocked up of a new MacBook with a perfectly aligned spacebar that is exactly the width of the trackpad. And how did he do this? By making half-size left and right arrow keys. So you got half-size up and down arrow keys, and then flanking it, half-size left and right arrow keys. And it does surprisingly fit, and it's hideous, and I would hate it. And I hope Johnny Ive never sees that, because it's going to give him ideas.
Why do you think this is so bad? I think it looks good.
I hate trying to... I use the inverted T arrow keys with three fingers. Middle finger is up, down. Mm-hmm. Pointer finger is left. Ring finger is right.
Sure.
I want full-size keys for those things to go on. I hate having up and down be the half-size keys, because I find myself accidentally hitting one or the other, or like trying to grope around to find the right key. Making the left and right also half size is just squishing my three fingers together until all three of them feel like they're trying to press the same keycap on different, you know, press the lower left corner of the keycap, press the right. No, full size keys. And again, on a tiny laptop like this, I kind of understand, you know, whatever. I'm just talking about like the 15 inch back when they had a 17 inch. The fact that they had a little tiny keyboard in there was ridiculous. Anyway, I would not like these arrow keys. I don't like laptop keyboards at all. But boy, it looks, if he sees this, man, look how beautiful it is with the space bar exactly the same width as the trackpad.
You don't even buy laptops.
I know. Just like, I don't think Johnny Ive used laptops. I think he just likes how the keyboards look. It's a perfectly rectangular outline for the laptop.
I think, going back for a second, I think if anything expresses the weirdness of Johnny Ive, I think it's the edition watch with the white sport band.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it doesn't, it's, how he dresses looks a lot like that watch. Like, the, right. when he dresses up, that sort of light, I don't know anything about fashion again, but sort of light colored pants, and just, or just think of like a Bentley with the white leather interior. I don't know if that's the kind of Bentley he has. Anyway, no accounting for taste, as they say.
Tell us about Marcus Brownlee and his prediction.
Yeah, a lot of people pointed this out. We talked about MKBHD before. That's his Twitter handle. Marcus Brownlee, apparently a very popular YouTube person that we don't know about because we are all old, including you. Oh,
that makes me feel so bad. That the one time when he had the supposedly sapphire cover glass, and we were like, this guy on YouTube, and none of us knew who he was.
Nope.
Meanwhile, he's like freaking massive in YouTube. Like, he was invited to the Apple event. He was like, he has an audience bigger than pretty much everybody we know in this space combined. Like,
right.
Yep. He is like the biggest guy in tech, and none of us know who he is.
That's only because your kids aren't old enough. Once your kids get old enough, you will very quickly come to accept that you don't know anybody, and all, you know, you're there, you just don't know it yet. Once your kids start telling you that you don't know who anybody is, or start talking about famous people and you don't recognize any of the names, that's when it really comes home. So you'll both get there.
Yeah, but like, usually, like, you know, it's okay for me to not know somebody who is a really big deal, like, in music or TV or something.
Nope.
To not know somebody who's a really big deal in my own industry.
That's right. I mean, for me, it was, you know, stuff about gaming, right? Because I subscribe to game magazines, I read gaming news sites and stuff like that, but I do not watch a lot of gaming YouTube channels, and they are humongous, and I don't know who any of those people are. And I'm fine with it, by the way, because I just am. But yeah, no, I mean, I've watched some of his videos. He does a great job. I would have eaten that up. If I was a kid and this YouTube existed and these channels exist, I would have been over the moon because I was trying to illegally get copies of Mac Week. That's what I was doing. These guys got HD video of a guy stabbing a potential iPhone thing with a knife. It's awesome. Anyway, he is getting bold. You know, these youths, they're brash predictions. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes. At 3 minutes and 14 seconds in this video, here is a quote from Marquez Brownlee.
I can pretty much guarantee the second generation of this thin and light new MacBook will have more than one USB port. Quote me.
Well, I quoted him. That's exactly what he said. He is just, he says, pretty much guarantee. The pretty much hedges a little bit, but then he says, quote me. All right, we're quoting you. You can pretty much guarantee that the next one's going to have two. I hope it does, as has been stated at length. I really hope it does. But this is interesting to see a popular person. I think he thinks there's going to be another one, assuming he has no inside info, which I have no way of knowing. But if he doesn't have any inside info, he's just saying, at least, you know, he's saying what we're all thinking. It's like, well, duh, the second one will obviously have a second port. Like, it's crazy to just have one with one port, right, guys? Right? Like, come on, you know. That could be what he's thinking. That could show either wisdom of knowing his history about the original MacBook Air that had one and eventually came out with two, or not knowing exactly how stubborn Apple can be. And I think we'll get to Apple's stubbornness a little bit later in a somewhat related topic. But I just wanted to put that out there so that we can all hold him to his prediction.
Yes, all of us who are approximately 25 times less than his own audience.
Oh, even much less. Yeah, and we're all old people, and he won't even know that we're talking about him, and that's fine. But amongst ourselves in our knitting circle and our book club and our little technology nerd thing, we will talk amongst ourselves about these youngsters.
No, I mean, I think I know we're going to talk endlessly about this port, but I would bet he's wrong about this. I would bet that this doesn't pan out that way. That
you shouldn't have said that.
Why?
Because you're always wrong about everything. We went through back when you said I thought the Apple Watch edition was going to be cheap. But that's your thing. Every time you do predictions on your blog, God, you're like, keep in mind that my track record of predicting Apple things is terrible. And that's the one thing you're right about. Your track record is not good. And so now that you said that, now I'm doubting. Now I'm like, oh, damn it. I agree with you. And now I think I must be wrong because I agree with Marco about a prediction on Apple.
All right. Before we take this any further, let's go ahead and thank another sponsor. And then we can go in the one versus many port black hole.
Oh my God, this is going to be all follow-up, isn't it?
Told you.
We got to put a time cap on follow-up.
We'll get to Nintendo even if we have to do it in the after show. It'll be fine.
Igloo is an intranet you will actually like. With Igloo, you can share news, organize your files, coordinate calendars, and manage projects all in one place. Go to igloosoftware.com/ATP. Igloo is like taking the best of the web and productivity apps. Things like calendars, Twitter-like microblogging, file sharing, task management, wikis, and more. All available privately and securely in your own intranet for your company or group project. Igloo intranets are highly functional, stylish, and easy to use with a widget-based drag-and-drop interface. Their latest upgrade, Viking, revolves around documents and how you interact with them, gather feedback, and make changes. They've even added the ability to track who has read critical information to keep everyone on the same page. It's like read receipts in your email, although less annoying, helping you track whether employees have read and acknowledged new policies for legal reasons, signed off on agreements, confirmed completion of training materials, etc. All of this, along with all of Igloo's other stuff, is based on their advanced HTML5 platform. It's fully responsive and offers all these features, even previewing and annotating documents, no matter what device you're on. You have full functionality whether you're on a computer, iPhone, Android phone, or even a BlackBerry. And when new devices and screen sizes hit the market, Igloo already works on them. And it includes all your customization. If you've customized it with your color, your logo, anything like that, all that is fully responsive on all these different devices. So if your company has a legacy intranet that looks like it was built in the 90s, you should definitely give Igloo a try. And one of my favorite parts of Igloo, it is completely free to use for as long as you want for groups of 10 or fewer people. And once you get past that, it is very reasonably priced. So if you have a company of 10 or fewer people, you can just use it for free forever. Like, that's it. Well, I don't know, you know, forever might have an asterisk, you know, if they like go out of business or something. But, you know, for the most part, you can use this thing forever. It is really, really great. Igloosoftware.com/ATP. You can get a free trial and completely free to use for groups of 10 or fewer. Thanks a lot to Igloo Software.
All right, so let's go into the black hole, John.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the ports again?
So this is from Dave W. He's getting down to the sort of philosophical reasoning for why there's, you know, what do I get with one port instead of two? Why is there one port instead of two? So on and so forth. Thus far, I've still not seen any credible practical support for the idea that there is one instead of two. Just lots of plausible theories. When, you know, lots of people like, what if, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, sure, I can play what if all day, but if you don't say, if the what if isn't true, like, then we don't know. So even though there's a bunch of potentially plausible reasons, like, you know, we went over them before, PCI Express lanes, power concerns, blah, blah, blah. You got to quantify them. You got to know that they're actually true, that you're just not saying this is in theory, this could be true. And then you have to quantify them, because if you quantify them, then you can say, oh, well, it would take more power, but it would take 0.000001 more watts of power. Then I don't care. Then it's not a good reason, right? But if it would take double the power, then I do care. So you have to quantify. Anyway, this reason gets more philosophical. Dave W. says, I can think of two reasons. Neither are about making this MacBook better. They're kind of both the same reason, but I'll give them the two. One, Apple can use customer reaction as a signal on whether it's safe to reduce the number of ports on the rest of their laptops. So this is sort of like, let's try it with one and see what the reaction is. It's a trial balloon. If it goes over like a lead balloon, then Marcus Brownlee will be right, and the next one will have two ports, and, you know, lesson learned, right? And number two, related, those who adjust first to having only one port effectively carve a path that makes it easier for the rest of us to follow. There's a lot of things about the carving the path. It's like, you get used to it, you get acclimated to it on a small thing, the industry of adapters and everything can be built up around that, so then it's safer to go the other models. The idea that it's a transition point to try to go to, you know, zero ports or go to one port everywhere. All of this sort of accepts as a premise that one port is the way to go, and then just explains how Apple would be using this as a strategy to get to one port. I don't think it answers the essential question from a consumer's perspective of, like, what am I getting with one that I wouldn't be getting with two? So that is still an open question. I will reemphasize that does not mean I think there is not an answer. I think there very well could be an answer, but the answer would have to be something in the form of, here is a technical reason or whatever that this couldn't be done. Not just, there could be a technical reason like this. Yeah, there could be, but we're not, you know what I mean? I'm not, it's not interesting to me to hear people speculate about how much power they think it would have taken to add a second port if they have no idea how much power it would have added to take a second port, if any. So we may never know. We'll have to wait till the next version of this thing comes out. If it still has one port, it shows that it didn't matter enough for Apple to care that it only had one. And related to that, God, I have a whole section about this down there. I didn't realize how long this goes. Sorry, guys. Related to the idea.
So I'll see you next week.
Yeah. Related to the idea that the case design dictates this, that they really wanted to have this case. Casey came up with this, fittingly, based on his name, that they really wanted to have this case. Have you ever had that that particular pun based on your name in your life?
What, caseless?
About a computer case?
No.
There's a first time for everything.
Yeah, well, people who have names and get teased about them, it's like, oh, it's the first time I heard that one. Well, you know, you've gone through 30-something years of life, and no one has ever compared your first name to a computer case until now.
Yep, that's true.
This is what I say every single time somebody says Marco Polo.
Yeah, I see Marco has heard that one before. I'll have to think of some novel way to compare Marco's name to something, but not today.
Damn.
Yeah, so oh Casey's God. Thing was they just wanted this case. And I started considering the notion, is that the way that anyone would design anything, that you just come up with the case and you just say, okay, now you just whatever you can fit inside that, go for it. And we've got a lot of armchair speculation about that from listeners and from us on the show, saying that regardless of whether this is how Apple designs things, it's a bad way to design things because it doesn't make any sense to me. And realistically speaking, it's an impossible way to design things because, you know, why isn't the MacBook as thin as a piece of paper? Well, that's the case I want to have. There are practical considerations that the people designing the case know. They know it can't be as thin as a piece of paper because they know at minimum there's some certain thickness for the CPU. You can't make the CPU the thickness of a sheet of paper right now. They know that. And you know, they're not engineers, but they know, everyone knows, like, okay, there's going to be a CPU in this. The CPU can't be a thickness of a piece of paper. So I'm not going to say this is the case. You get, like, the case is always defined by what's inside it because the people designing it know the limitations roughly of the stuff that's inside it. But you could say, yeah, within the bounds of that, they just design the outside and then the inside comes after. Well, I don't think we need to speculate about what actually goes on inside Apple, because Johnny Ive, in a video interview with Vanity Fair at 6:38 in, is this a question, I guess? The interviewer asks, so when you started off, you were designing the outsides of the machines almost exclusively. And again, I would encourage people to read that Johnny Ive book that we will put a link to in the show notes, that it goes over his history in the company and how kind of he would, back in the bad old days, he would kind of get a completed machine and he was asked to sort of put a nice looking thing around the box, right? And that's not the way he liked to work. So Johnny's answer is yes, that this, in the bad old days, this was how it was going. Yes, but I think if you're going to do a good job, you can't just impose an outside on something. You know, you have to have a bigger idea. And that always meant that you're involved in designing the layout and the internal architecture with the engineers. It's one of the things I really love. I really love doing a lot. So there it is from the horse's mouth. He is not just designing the outside. He's designing the outside of the inside together because that's the better way to design things. That's what he loves doing. Period. End of story.
All right.
Are we done with the follow-up yet?
Oh, no. We have a humongous section on naysayer notions. So
this just looks big. You should go.
Oh, my God. This is.
You should open up all these links in tabs. I think we'll breeze through this because it's really just a lot of.
My screen's not big enough.
A lot of links. And just open a new window and just put all the tabs lined up in it.
I'm at my window limit.
Not so. Three. it's not so bad. So these are all the various the various naysayers about the idea that we're going to call, like, MacBook fatalism, or sort of like hardware design fatalism, that the way it is, the way things are, is the only way they could ever have been because that is the way they are. Like, is a tautological, fatalistic notion that Apple has done something, therefore the only way Apple could have done something is the way Apple did something because that's the way Apple did it. Right? That just goes around and around in circles, a snake eating its tail, and people love it. They just cannot resist the notion that it is absolutely, positively impossible to make this machine with two USB-C ports without some massive compromise that would destroy the machine, either spiritually, physically, or both. Right? One idea was related to the taper, that if you made, and Mark even said this on the show, if you made this machine either untapered or less tapered, that they would not be distinguishable from the 13-inch MacBook Pro. And even though I directly addressed that on the past show, at least I gave my opinion on it, people acted like they didn't hear me, or at least acting like they disagree. I actually sent someone a mock-up of, like, the side view of the thing and saying, I just drew a straight line where there was a taper, and then I colored in the triangle, and it was like, put computer here. Like, this black triangle that I have drawn, that's the place that does not currently have computer. Put computer there. And I think that machine, if you put it next to a side view of the 13-inch MacBook Pro, it is still clearly distinguishable, even if you entirely eliminate the taper.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think, I wasn't saying it was going to be exactly the same, but, you know, the difference would be a lot smaller. It would still be noticeably smaller because it's a smaller screen,
Right. And you could just taper it less. Like what I was getting at is like, even if you just taper it a little bit less, you like the battery savings are tremendous because there is so little battery in there that even just a couple of degrees of, a fraction of a degree of untapering gives you potentially a large percentage more battery.
Yeah, but then that would push it over the magical 2-pound mark, too. Even if it was only a little bit, even if it was 2.1 pounds, you know, that's still...
There's nothing magical about 2 pounds. 2.01 pounds, 2.02, 2.03, again, you have to quantify it. How much more does it weigh? Could a person, given these two things, be able to tell the difference in weight blindfolded between 2.012 and 2.... You know, like, it's nice for marketing materials that it's exactly 2 on the nose. Who knows if it even is? It's like a displacement in engines, you know. Well, we'll just, you know, it's close enough, right? I don't even know if it is exactly 2 pounds on the nose. It's like, again, you have to quantify because people are willing to say, like, if you make this thing 1 gram heavier, the whole machine is ruined. If you make it 1 millimeter longer in any dimension, that's it. It's Johnny Ive will cry because he wanted that particular case. And now you've ruined it because it is perfect. And if you make, and the best thing about it is like in the whole parallel mirror universe thing where you have a million different universes where they make a million different decisions and you actually do introduce this machine with variations of fractions of a pound and fractions of a millimeter, everyone in those universes would be like, this is the only way it could have possibly been. And if I saw a machine that was different in any dimension or in any weight measured by a tiny amount, I would know that it is different. When you wouldn't, you would just accept whatever machine they put out and you would say, that's the machine. And anyway, I get frustrated. So a lot of people, you know, here's the people who are quote unquote on my side kept coming in with these examples of existing PC machines that supposedly demonstrate everything that I'm frustrated about. And there's a whole bunch of stories about this. There's one on The Verge about the Asus ZenBooks, beautifully named capital U, capital X 305. Great product name there, Asus.
I believe it's pronounced asses.
I believe it's not. That is thinner than the new MacBook. And of course, has multiple ports, as everything else does. What is that? It says an SD card reader, headphone jack, 3 USB ports, not type C, full size, 3 full-size USB ports, micro HDMI, and it's thinner than this new one. And people are like, oh, see, that shows Apple could have made it smaller. But those people weren't paying attention to the specs because this machine is 1 inch wider, 1 inch deeper, and 0.5 pound heavier. And those are quantifiable. 1 inch is not a couple of millimeters. 1 inch wider, 1 inch deeper. I don't know how to talk about these dimensions when I say that people think it's like 1 inch thick. I guess you know what I mean, right? It is thinner when you lay it down than the MacBook, but it is much bigger in the other dimensions. And it's 0.5 pound heavier. And I think 0.5 pound, you could probably tell that. It's not just like 2.0 versus 2.1 pounds, right? It's also, by the way, 1/2 the price of the MacBook. So all this is showing is that another machine was made with different trade-offs. If the new MacBook was the same dimensions and weight as this, in that mirror universe, I think people would be fine with it. But now that you can see them side by side, clearly the Apple one is giving you a trade-off that I think people would find more attractive for double the price, I guess. Then there's Lenovo Yoga Pro 3. I guess it's better because it doesn't have a bunch of alphanumerics in the name, but Yoga? You name your computer Yoga? I don't like that. I don't like that.
This is the one that had the misleading ad, right?
Yeah, so we should put a link to the show notes. First of all, they are...
That was really bad.
They are touting the fact that they're thinner, and they put the computer, the side view of the computers next to each other and just use different scales for them.
Wildly different scales.
Yeah, like they are a few millimeters thinner, but again, because humans can't perceive a few millimeters, like if you drew an accurate picture, people would be like, those look like the same thickness, because nobody can tell when it's a few millimeters off, except for, of course, the people who think that the entire MacBook would be ruined if it was a few millimeters different in any dimension. Anyway... Yeah, they totally cheated on the ad. But it is thinner, slightly. It's bigger in the other two dimensions. It has full-size USB. It's 0.5 pound heavier, blah, blah, blah. Noticing a trend here, right? And so all this goes to say that all the people finding the other machines that seem to be better than the MacBook and all things, they're just shifting around the internal components. This doesn't say anything one way or the other about whether Apple could have, within the same case or within a case that is imperceptibly different, done 2 USB ports. I remain convinced that Apple could have put 2 USB ports on this without a perceptible loss of anything to anybody. But these computers don't say anything pro or con to that argument, I think. They are interesting, though, to see what other people are doing with similar chipsets, both in terms of price, battery life, and the other type of limitations. The most fun one is, what is this one here? Who sent this in? Someone named Ken sent in A Microsoft Windows 8.1 PC the size of a dongle. So it's something about, they show a little lipstick container next to it. It's about the size of like one of those streaming sticks, right? And it has more ports than the Mac Pro. It's about the size of a lipstick. And what does it have on it? It looks like it has full-size USB, micro HDMI, micro SD port, HDMI and USB. Yeah. That is probably the most embarrassing. But again, that's not a full-fledged computer. It doesn't have a keyboard, blah, 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 blah. It's just funny. The other limit that we... Did we talk about the 8 gig RAM limit, I think, briefly?
Yeah. Yeah.
That you can't get it with 16. That, I'm actually more willing to... So RAM chips take up room. You can't put more RAM on there. Like, you can't say, well, I'll just shrink the other RAM. I mean, I'm assuming they're fabbing the RAM at the same size as everybody else, like, and that it would not be economical to try to press the process size. And usually RAM is one of the best process sizes anyway, because it's really easy to make because it's very regular. So you would need more space for the RAM.
Also battery power.
Yeah, and a little bit of battery power. Like, I think we're all well aware of the trade-offs of more RAM on portable devices, which is, you know, we're always complaining about it with iOS devices. But the tricky bit here is, like, we're not saying that they should all have 16, merely that 16 should be an option somewhere. And historically, once Apple started soldering the RAM to the boards, it has not been good about giving out. Has it ever given a BTO option for a laptop with RAM soldered to the board?
Yeah, the whole 15-inch line.
I thought they all came with 16 now, and that's it.
When I bought mine, the first gen, it was an option. I got 8. I got the base model, but 16 was available.
Yeah, and for Aaron's MacBook Air that I'm talking to you on right now, the only thing that made it a BTO was that I made it have 8 gigs of RAM instead of 4.
Yeah, so it's always nice to have that other one. And in practice, like, even though only nerds know that, like, oh, more RAM needs more power and everything like that, A, a lot of people are willing to take that trade-off, and B, if you asked anybody to measure that trade-off, it's actually probably pretty hard to measure. Like, you would have to come up with some sort of, you know, I don't know, like, measuring energy usage is a pain, which I know from my extensive attempts to try to test Maverick's battery usage. There's just so many variables. Like, what is representative usage for you? How can you prove that the 8 versus the 16, how could you show a measurable difference? Or is it just, like, within the margin of error of your energy testing thing? Like, would you notice it in real life? But regardless, it's nice to have choices, but it's better for Apple to have one SKU. Although then they made it in colors. But anyway, to have one board, right? To have one board inside all these machines, it's a nice simplification. 8 is a little bit, you know, we were talking about the limitations of the machine. The RAM limit is the one you can't get around as easily. If you're really pressed, you can attach external storage. And for CPU stuff, you can just wait longer. But RAM is just this unfixable, like, and it's fine for most people. But if you know you need more RAM than that and you'd really love to use this machine, and you'd be willing to say, charge me more money, use more of my battery, it's more important for me to have 16 gigs of RAM so I can do task X on the road with a super light MacBook, this is not the product for you. I think it's not the worst RAM choice they've made. I think keeping 1 gig in the iOS devices for so long was more painful than this, just because of all the Safari tabs going away every time you switch to another app. It also burned me, by the way, my RAM star machine burned me playing Alto, which, by the way, is a great game we should link in the show notes. Because I would leave the game paused, and then, like, I don't know if I would just close the lid and then I would open back up again and the game is gone. I sometimes forget that, like, if I switch away for a second to read Twitter, Alto is out of memory, and if I was in the middle of a run, I'm screwed now. So I think the iOS devices have been more RAM starved than Macs lately. The Macs have been getting better, in particular when they went to 16 across the board on the MacBook Pro line. It was like, thank God, to reflect the fact that it's a Pro. So I think 8 gig is the right choice for the bottom of the line here. It's just a shame that it doesn't go up higher. But,
well, for whatever it's worth, you know, to be fair to this computer, I just verified all of the MacBook Airs currently ship with 4 stock and max out at 8. Like, you can BTO all of them. They max out at 8. So this thing, as a replacement to the MacBook Air, to come stock with 8 is pretty good, first of all.
But it's not very forward-looking, though. Like, that's an old machine. It's, like, at the end of its life. It's, like, when, you know, the last model year of a car before it goes through the generational revision. Like, I give the MacBook Air as a pass because they're the older machine. This is the new one. It should be built for the future.
Well, they were just updated, though. You know, they all just got a minor update. So, anyway, so, you know, as this thing basically sitting pretty close to the bottom of the lineup, I don't think it's that unreasonable for it to have 8 gigs of RAM stock. I mean, 8 gigs of RAM stock at this price, I think, is good. And maxing out at 8, just matches it up to the other MacBook Airs. And so I think the goal here was probably to minimize SKUs and board space. And so I'm sure they'll switch to 16 gigs once whatever, you know, mainstream RAM process, you know, basically once the DRAM chips double in size that they're using, you know, like once that becomes reasonably available for a good price, I bet that's when they'll do it. I wouldn't be too concerned about that. And I think, you know, seeing the rest of the lineup, I'm actually very pleasantly surprised that they all come with a minimum of 8 gigs. I think that's great.
What does the Mac, the big tube Mac Pro come with? Isn't it some ridiculous minimum, like 12 or something?
12. Yeah, you're right. That is weird.
Yeah, I know.
It's three DIMMs.
Apple's always been really weird, right? But yeah, this is fine. Like, far more people would find a practical use for a second USB port than care about having more RAM. So it's just something to note. Mostly because, like, you know, the other comparable machines, all this one is thinner and it goes up to 16 and all that other business, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, again, on this machine, though, you know, we're all looking at it as geeks because we all want this to be good for us because it's new and shiny and really impressive in a few, you know, physical ways. So we're all looking at this like getting mad at it, you know, almost like getting mad at the Apple Watch Edition for not being made for us and not being priced for us. You know, we're looking at this MacBook and saying, man, why do they only have one port? Our big rage. Why is there only 8 gigs of RAM here? Big rage. But the fact is, it's a low spec laptop made for other priorities, and it's really tiny. Like, I can't think of anything I would do on this machine that would need more than 8 gigs of RAM, because if I'm doing stuff like that, I need more screen space by a lot, not by a little. I need a lot more screen space.
Yeah, but some people get by with that much screen space. Like, we all have the things that annoy us. Like, the port is the most annoying one for me because I don't see the reasoning behind it. The 816, like, the economics and the power draw and the placement of this machine is a low-end machine, but like I don't think like a second USB port is a high-end feature. And you know, like, it just, that's the one that I think is the most needless, the most sort of arbitrary as far as we know. Like, there's no good reason to support it. It's just what they want to do. Whereas the 8 gigs of RAM, we can all think of much, you know, lots of good reasons for it. And the screen size, like, that may annoy you because you have trouble working in a small, but you see why the screen is small, because that's how big the laptop is. Like, that, there's a direct correlation there. So this is low on my list. It's just, I thought it was worth discussing in the context of Apple's history of RAM limits. And bringing up the 4 gigs on the Air is great, because that shows how far they've come. If this thing had come out with 4, we would be screaming about it way more than the port situation, I think.
Our final sponsor this week is Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter offer code ATP at checkout. Squarespace 7 came out this past fall, and it's really amazing. It has a redesigned interface, totally WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. You're editing your page live right there, like in your page. You can just edit stuff and change stuff and preview stuff. It's really incredible what they can do. You can preview how your site will look on an iPhone right in your web browser on your desktop. It can simulate all the different device sizes. It's amazing. They have an integration with Google Apps for your domain. They have a partnership with Getty Images to get stock photography for any of the things, anything you need stock photography for, a logo, a post, a background, anything like that. You can get any photo that's in this giant collection for just $10, one time upfront fee. That's it. And that's a very good deal, believe me. Having bought stock photos before for things, that's a fantastic deal. And it's all integrated right there. You can shop and browse right in Squarespace, right in the interface. It's amazing. They have all new templates, and they're always adding more templates. You know, they're always really good about that. They stay modern, so, like, you know, you don't have to like pay a lot for one design up front and then, you know, keep it for 10 years because you can't afford a new one. They're always adding new designs, always adding new templates. They have a new feature that's very powerful called cover pages, where you can, if you want, have like a splash page on the front of your site, either temporarily or all the time. It can match your template, or it can use a totally different template. So you can have like a temporary promotion up there. You can have a little intro that's different from the rest of your site. Really great uses there. You can see all these features and more at squarespace.com/7, spelled out, S-E-V-E-N. Now, otherwise, you know, other than version 7, Squarespace is, you know, it's what we've always been talking about here. It's beautiful website builder, simple and powerful. They offer 24/7 support via live chat and email. All this starts at just $8 a month, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a whole year up front. You can get all this at squarespace.com. Get a free trial. You can just start building it. If you don't believe me, and, you know, hey, maybe you shouldn't, I don't know, go see for yourself. Go to squarespace.com, make a website yourself. You can start a free trial with no credit card. You just type in, you know, your email and a name, and that's about it. And you can start a free trial. And you can play with it for up to a week. And then they'll even ask you at the end of that, like, hey, you want to keep going with that? You can if you want. It's great. I really suggest it. You won't believe how powerful it is until you see it and try it. So go start a free trial today. Squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up, please make sure to use offer code ATP to get 10% off your first purchase. We thank Squarespace for supporting our show once again. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere.
All right. We're getting there.
Final sponsor, still in follow-up.
Yeah. MagSafe and USB-C and trippability. We talked about this before the machine came out, but not so much afterwards. And luckily, we don't have to do the hard work because, was this Glenn Fleischman, I think, in Macworld?
Yep.
Tried to figure out, again, in the grand tradition of all of us commenting on things we've never seen or touched, try to figure out how this new MacBook will behave if you trip over the cord versus how MagSafe behaves. With all sorts of perhaps questionable physics, he did involve Dr. Drang in this discussion, but predictably Dr. Drang had complaints about how the information was conveyed after the fact. Anyway, we'll put the link in the show notes. He tried to use coefficients of friction and physics and forces to figure out what will happen when you trip over the cord of your USB-C connected new MacBook. I don't know what will happen. I remember when we first discussed this, I was totally willing to believe that because the connector is so tiny, it might have similar performance characteristics to MagSafe, depending on the angle that the thing is pulled, and the apparently the thing that matters the most is how quickly the force is applied, not so much the direction. Anyway, read the story. We'll all find out once we get these things and our kids and significant others start tripping over them.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, you know, if you look at both Glenn and Dr. Drang's analyses of this, you know, they have to make some estimations here and there and you know, some ballparks here and there because we just don't have certain information. But it basically looks like there's a very, very good chance of it being able to be pulled off a table with you know, enough force or enough speed of tripping over that cable with so much leeway that, you know, it's pretty clear that even if their assumptions are not that accurate, there's so much leeway in the number that, like, yeah, pretty much, like, you don't want to have this thing plugged in with the cable draped across something where people are going to be walking. Like, again, if this is yet another thing, if that's important to you, this machine is not right for you. Or you need to get some kind of extension cord.
Like, MagSafe could go away entirely, and Apple could just, again, like I was saying, like, they didn't make a big deal out of this by saying, we thought MagSafe was a good idea, but it turns out it's not a big deal. They just didn't mention it. And if this turns out not to be a problem, I can see them ditching MagSafe and all their other machines too, just because they're going to get thinner too. And MagSafe is pretty big, and MagSafe 2 is worse than MagSafe 1, partially, we assume, because it got smaller and didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't quite work as well. And people complain about MagSafe not staying connected enough. Like, they use it on their couch and they switch to MagSafe 2 and it was always coming disconnected and it was annoying them. Like, it seems like the problem is in the other direction. So now maybe this is a solution for those people to say, well, you were annoyed by MagSafe 2 constantly coming disconnected when you didn't want it to, when no one's tripping over it. Well, this will solve that problem for you. I think the interesting thing about their analysis was they were taking force numbers from the USB spec, because the USB spec says how much, what the min and max force is for plugging and unplugging. There's a pretty wide range there, but it's interesting that, you know, they could get as far as they could with the analysis without actually having machines to trip over. And Peter Wagenet or Wagenet or something like that tweeted that no MagSafe on the new MacBooks means Apple doesn't expect to use it plugged in. No one complains about no MagSafe on the iPad. And this is the idea that with this all-day battery life and so on and so forth, you don't use it plugged in. When you're using it, it's not plugged in. And like your iPad or your phone, when you're not using it, you plug it in. Unfortunately, I have seen a lot of people, including my children, much to my chagrin, use iOS devices while plugged in. This is a no-no in terms of cable life, although I still maintain my unbroken record of never having destroyed a lightning cable or never having...
I broke mine this week or last week. I lost my first one. I'm so upset.
You lost it as in damaged it to the point it doesn't work?
Yeah, it was the one I'm using in an elevation dock, so it has like this bracket that like it like turns it on a right angle. So like I'm not surprised it's that one, but I'm still annoyed.
Yeah, so, but I do see people, have you seen this? Have you done it yourself? Used an iOS device while plugged in?
I do.
Yeah, my kid's iPad, which is also the first iOS device I've ever had that has a cracked screen, that is frequently being used while plugged in because, you know, a lot of times kids, especially when they're not even three, don't remember to plug their iPads in all the time when they need to. So sometimes it's desired to be used at a time when it's not fully charged.
Yeah, my son has his range anxiety for his iPad because he watches YouTube videos. He used to play Minecraft on it, but he watches YouTube videos, and like he's never really in danger of running out of battery, even on this. You know, it's an original iPad 2, right? But if the battery looks a little bit low, it just makes him feel safer to just use it plugged in all the time, which is terrible because he's constantly kinking the cord and moving around. And I'm like, you're at 100%. You've been at 100% for 20 minutes. Unplug the thing. You can go to another place. You don't have to be sitting next to the cord. Anyway, the idea that the new MacBook, that's the model they're going with there, is like you don't use it when it's plugged in. And then Serenity Caldwell replied to that same thread. She says, well, if the MacBook had 12 to 15 hours of battery, maybe, but 9 is right on the edge for me. So, you know, can you use it like an iPad? iPad has a comfortable 10, and I think people are less likely to just sit in front of an iPad for an entire working day. Andy Notko accepted, I guess. Anyway, we'll see. If that is the new use case, and if they can stretch out the battery to the point where people stop feeling like they need to have it plugged in while they're using it, they just use it and it's not plugged in, and then close it up, put it someplace else, plug it in when you're not using it, that could make the MagSafe issue moot as well.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I totally agree with Serenity that like, you know, all these new Apple laptops, you know, you can tell, like Jason Snell had that post a couple months back that Apple was like solving for a certain battery life with the iPads and with the iPhones. And you could see, like, especially with the iPads, like it's very clear that Apple takes whatever gains they get with advancements in battery technology or more efficient components, any gains they get that in battery life that could be used to make something with much longer battery life, they usually apply instead to keep the same battery life but with less physical battery, and then you can make the whole thing thinner and lighter.
Did you just attribute that to Jason Snell?
He wrote the article about it, right?
We talked about it like a year ago.
Well, yeah, but he wrote an article about it, and he had pretty graphs. Come on.
I know, just because he wrote it down, you attribute your own idea to Jason because he wrote about it. Not that I'm saying, yeah, Jason's right, we agree with him, but I think it was you or us. We talked about this like a year before he wrote that, but because he wrote it down in a blog post,
yeah,
our podcast discussions don't count, and now this is Jason's idea.
Well, I'm sure if we said it a year ago, I'm sure we weren't the first people to say it even then.
So I know, anyway. But of all the people to attribute to yourself, you oh, never mind,
doesn't matter who said it, but you know, I think if you look across Apple's lineup, like this is one of those areas where like I think they have calculated that a little bit wrong. I would love to have 25% more battery life across the line, 30%, like 40%, something like the 6 Plus kind of does that, but I think it does that almost accidentally. In the laptops, they're all within the same pretty narrow range, like with or lower, like the 11 inch is actually lower, but they're all within this, like, you know, 9 to 11 hour range. That's all like pretty close. And the problem is those numbers are wildly variable based on what you're doing with it. If you're doing something that stresses the CPU more than average, that number could drop by half. You know, there isn't necessarily enough leeway for a lot of people in these numbers to be running untethered to things all day. And if that was how you're intended to use this laptop all the time, personally, I would want a longer battery life on it. I would want, you know, more like 15 hours.
Yeah, and Marco, you have just recently done the thing that I've seen done many other places, which is somehow arranged to have a Apple power connector snaking out of the cushions in your couch.
Yes.
And why would you do that? Because you find yourself using Apple devices and you have, you know, range anxiety as well. You just feel more comfortable being able to plug them in, to have it on your lap and to plug them in, sit on your couch and do it. And really, that's the kind of usage where MagSafe comes in handy, because in the office, if people are sitting at their desk with their laptop plugged in, like the cords are, you know, down behind, like they're not in a trippable location, but in people's houses, when they're using them on their couches, that's when things get tripped over. And it's like, why are you having it plugged in when you use it on your couch? Well, you feel like I just always keep it next to the couch, and it's a pain to plug in and unplug it, and sometimes I'm near the end of the battery, but I don't want to stop what I'm doing, whether it's watching a movie or playing a game or even just web browsing, so I just, it's nice to have it on your lap and have it plugged in, right? And so then eventually you end up snaking the little Apple power cord up between the cushions in your couch, and it's convenient, right? And I think it's going to be very difficult. You're going to have a hell of a battery to stop people from doing that, and 9 hours is comfortably below that limit, where I think you feel like you have to go to like 24 hours or something. And even then, the problem is if people don't pay attention, like if they forget to charge it overnight, they come in the next morning, they're like, oh, well, it's not like I'm not going to use my computer. Let me just plug it in while I use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we definitely have one of those cords snaked between our couch as well.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a thing. No, I've seen it over many years. I've resisted doing it mostly because I stick to iOS devices on the couch, and so far I've been able to keep that policy. But if someone, like, we have...
Our cord is an iOS cord. It's a lightning cable.
Yeah, same here.
So you're using, like, iPads plugged in?
Usually iPhones, but sometimes iPads.
Same here.
iPhone. See, you're using the iPhones plugged into iPhone. Like I said, I have my battery life on my 6. I mean, it's a new phone, and I'm so far, I have not ever had to use it plugged in. Occasionally, my iPad upstairs, if I'm in a big alto session and I notice I'm getting a little low on battery, I get nervous, but I don't like using it plugged in. Speaking of plugging things in, one of the other, this should have been the naysayer section, the idea that, like, well, if they had two USB-C ports, what are you going to do? Have one that you can charge through and one that you can't? That's confusing. People are of two minds in this. Some people said having one port that you can charge from and one that you can't is too confusing. It's a non-starter. And other people said you can't have two ports that you can charge from because it's confusing. I'm not sure what would be confusing, that people wouldn't know which port they're... Like, if it works in both, they don't have to know, but somehow they'd be concerned that they were plugging in the wrong one. And a lot of people said it's just impossible. You can't have something that charges from both ports because it's electrically impossible or because whatever. The Chromebook Pixel... actually has two USB-C ports, and it can charge from both of them, so it is not electrically impossible. If you thought that was the case, here's a product that shows that it's not. I assume this machine does not immediately burst into flames if you plug in a charger into both sides. We have this amazing technology that they can sense when things are plugged in. We have the technology. We can make something with two USB-C charging ports. Can you make it with 4, 6? I believe we can. We sent a man to the moon. I believe we can make a computer with 6 USB charging ports.
Oh, wow.
Whether or not that is becomes more complicated to some degree that precludes it, I don't know. But anyway, there is one that charges from two. If you think charging from two is more confusing than charging from only one, I don't know. I don't know what the right call is. I think either one would probably be fine. But if you're going to have two identical looking ports and you're not going to make one clearly the charging port, you should just make it charge from either port. And I think we can do that.
Well, I don't think we have time for anything else this week, except for all this follow-up.
No, we're almost there. There's like two more items. We're going to do it.
Okay, go for it.
Mirrored display only. I put a question mark because I didn't check that. Is that the case? You can't do extended display. You can only mirror the display?
Doesn't sound right.
I was thinking about a desk at work. If I'm forced to get a laptop to replace my current Mac Pro at work, I would actually choose to do it mirrored just so my windows wouldn't move every time I plugged and unplugged.
Oh my God.
You're the only human who would ever say that.
Because I only like one screen. I would only ever look at like the main screen, right? And what I would do is get a 15-inch and set it to the max like FACO resolution and just have it be the same on my 24-inch monitor. Anyway.
You are insane, sir.
I don't know if that's the case. We'll leave a question mark. FaceTime camera downgraded from 720p to 480p. I put a question mark after that, but I think it's true, right?
Two things. First of all, the real-time follow-up, nobody_ in the chat room, is quoting the MacBook specs page, and it's right there on the specs page. This does support display spanning and mirroring, so that's not a problem. And then secondly, who cares about the resolution of the front camera? This is one of those like megapixel race things where the resolution has never mattered.
Well, 480 is pushing it, don't you think?
No, it goes from a crappy camera with more pixels to a crappy camera with less pixels. Either way, you're getting crappy images. It's not made for quality. It's made for like just barely being good enough to do FaceTime. That's all it's for.
Casey needs to say his beautiful baby's face in HD.
Sure.
And so do I, for that matter. Everybody does. What Marco said is probably true about the light gathering ability of those pixels. I don't think it's a big deal. I assume it was kind of mostly there for cost savings, but I don't think I don't know. 480, I think, is the type of thing I would notice. 480 versus 720, I think I would notice that, but it's just kind of a shame. Like, you know, it's going to be 720 in like a revision or two. Like, I'm gonna pull a Marcus Brownlee here and say, guaranteed, 2 or 3 revisions from now, that camera will not be 480.
Quote me.
Oh, it's very possible. Yeah, I'm just saying it probably isn't that big of a deal.
So this will be just like the 1 year that it came with the 480. Anyway, not a big deal, but something to keep in mind if you really care about having HD pictures while you, whatever, like just use your phone. It's got a higher definition camera to do FaceTime stuff. And I'm going to skip the three finger drag thing.
Thanks a lot to our three sponsors this week. I can't even read them. Hold on.
Yeah, I can fit one more item in while
Damn
you
it.
Search.
Ah! Fracture, Igloo, and Squarespace. And we will see you next week. I beat you.
Now the show is over. They didn't even mean to begin. Because it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. John didn't do any research. Marco and Casey wouldn't let him. Because it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. And you can find the show notes at atp.fm. And if you're into Twitter, you can follow them at CASEYLISS. So that's Casey Liss, MARCOARMENT, Marco Arment, SIRAC. USA Syracuse, it's accidental. They didn't mean to. Accidental. Tech podcast so long.
Dude, we've got to put a time limit on follow-up.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Like,
all right, so let's save it by talking Nintendo. But
this is a topic too. I mean, like, I think just because we talked about it on the previous show, which makes it follow up on this show, doesn't make it any less of a topic than it was last week. You know what I mean? It's still the same subject.
Yeah.
And I also blame Marco for going to England and delaying the show, because we would not have had this much follow up if we had recorded on Wednesday.
We would have had 2 days less. Believe me, it would have been pretty similar.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's it's an interesting machine with a lot of interesting compromises, and it's worth talking about.
Oh yeah,
I agree. So now let's talk about something potentially uplifting, and let's get our Nintendo chat out of the way real quick, because that'll totally be quick.
Are you serious?
Oh, actually, no. What about the 6 Plus? You want to talk about that? That'll be a topic, and it'll be quickish.
So I went on this trip, and I brought with me a 6 Plus to do the local SIM card thing, because it's my 6 Plus is unlocked, so I bought it for developer testing.
Let me stop you there. Where did you get your local SIM? Because I've never done this, and I'm very intrigued by the whole process.
I had never done it either, but I was tipped off in advance by our friend Daniel Jocka that this was like really easy in England. And it varies by country. Some places it's easier than others. But in England, you can just go, like, there's a store in the airport. Like, I walked out of customs, and while waiting for my ride, there was a store right there that sold SIMs. So I walked in and they did it right there. Like, I paid £30 for a SIM on the Carrier 3. And, it supports £30 got me 30 days of unlimited data, some number of local UK minutes that I will never use, and even tethering with all that. And I asked the guy, I'm like, well, I'm going to Ireland in 2 weeks. So, no, you know, not every SIM in England will work in Ireland. 3 is one of the only ones that does. And I asked the guy, oh, does it work there? He said, yeah, but there's a limit on the tethering there. I'm like, oh, 25 gigs.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Oh, okay. So don't worry, that won't be a problem. So yeah, £30 got me all that. And some people were saying they got a very similar plan for £15 somewhere else. So that might have even been overpriced.
I would absolutely pay £30 for that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, and that's amazing. Like, even after the exchange rate, that is cheaper than what I pay per month for AT&T in my home plan. And it comes with unlimited data. I mean, it's like that's a better plan than I have at home for less money. So I did that, and the guy, I brought my phone, the guy popped it in right there, and even though I did bring my own SIM removal tool, which is a paperclip, because I don't have the official one.
Do they not have paperclips in England, along with no top sheets?
I didn't want to presume that they would have paperclips, so I brought my own paperclip in my carry-on bag. So, yeah, so I brought the 6 Plus as my unlocked phone, and you know, normally I just pay AT&T the $30 for the 120 megs of data, and I'm just afraid to use it ever for the whole trip. So it ends up I pay $30 to not have data for the whole trip, or I accidentally use it and, you know, launch Instagram once and then I've blown the cap and pay another $30 every 100 megs. It's annoying. So anyway, this is the first trip where I did this and it was great. It was fantastic to just not have to think about it. Just, you know, I have an iPhone. Like, I always have an iPhone. I can just use it whenever I want, and it's fine. I'll fit within whatever limit there is. It's just by my normal usage, and I can download stuff if I want to. I can tether if I want to. It was great. So definitely recommend doing this if you have any unlocked phones. I also, in advance, just in case, I unlocked my old AT&T 5S, which you can do. AT&T now has a thing you can do it online. It takes like 5 minutes. You can just fill out a form online, and it like sends it to them to review, and then like 2 minutes later they approve it, and that's it. So that was great. And I spent the whole week using the 6 Plus.
Did you download season 5 of Mad Men while you were asleep? You could have done that with 25 gigs. Would have been close.
No, it was unlimited in the UK.
Oh,
it's unlimited for 2 weeks from now when I go back. So tethering was great. Using it as data was great. And using the 6 Plus, it felt really, really weird and huge for about the first half a day. And then I just forgot about it, and it just felt normal. And, you know, there were times where it felt large in my pocket here and there, but for the most part, like, you know, like when I first got the 6 Plus, like for my testing and everything, when it came out, you know, that was when we were all coming from the five line of phones. And so the 6 and the 6 Plus both felt really big. And I was barely able to really hold on to the 6, let alone the 6 Plus, which just looked ridiculous. But now, having now used the 6 for so long, going to the 6 Plus from the 6 was not a huge jump. It didn't feel that ridiculous now that I'm used to the 6. And once I was using the 6 Plus for half a day, it felt fine. It felt good. And I was able to enjoy it, to just really, you know, just enjoy all the screen space as a travel device. I mean, as an everyday device, I'm not sure if I would prefer that, just because, you know, it is pretty big in the pocket. But as a travel device, I loved it because it has way better battery life. Mine happens to be unlocked, so that helps a lot with international stuff. And it's nice to, like, so, and on this trip, I didn't bring an iPad at all.
It's a phablet. You had a phablet. You didn't need it.
Yeah, there was no reason to bring an iPad. And so I had this little phone, and like, hey, you know, this is how I cut down the weight of my laptop in my bag. I stopped bringing an iPad. Saved a pound and a half right there. So now I have a 15-inch laptop and no iPad, and then I'm carrying around the same size bag as all these people with their MacBook Airs and their 10 different devices. So I think the 6 Plus is great. So I came home yesterday and switched back to my 6 on AT&T now. And now the 6 feels tiny. Like, it actually feels like noticeably small. And I miss the screen space, and I might actually switch back at some point. I'm not sure yet. Certainly I'll switch back when I go to Ireland in 2 weeks, but I get the 6 Plus now. Like, I gave it the chance. Now I understand it. I get it. I get why people like it. I like it. I'm not sure if I like it enough to use it full time or to get another one next year. I don't know about that, but I get it now. And I think all of us who were saying that it was completely ridiculous and couldn't understand who would buy it, I think give it a try sometime. And it's really, I totally get it now. And I might convert at some point. We'll see.
I hope my grandkids find this episode so they can laugh at us all about the idea that, like, you have to decide on a certain set of differently sized pieces of glass to bring with you. Like, so I've got the really small one, which is my phone, and then I've got the iPad, and then I got the laptop, which has the keyboard, and you're shuffling around. Well, if we can make this piece of glass a little bit bigger, then I can get rid of that piece of glass because this now fills the gap or whatever. And they'll have every image being displayed on the back of their retinas by tiny nano machines or something. And it'll be like, remember when they had to pick different pieces of glass and pack them in their suitcases? What jerks.
No, I mean, really, it is a really good device. And like, it totally eliminated any desire I had for an iPad while I was there. I mean, I'm obviously, you know, I said when I bought this last iPad that I was experimenting because I had kind of fallen out of iPad usage, and and part of it I thought was just because I had like all the worst hardware, and so I got the best iPad, and to see if that would fix my usage, and it hasn't. So I don't think I'll be getting any more iPads for a long time. Now that I see the 6 Plus, like, I really do respect this device, and, you know, it might be the phone for me because it has more space. If you're not going to have an iPad, it's a great balance between the two for screen space reasons, and you can't beat the battery life. And with the Apple, I had the Apple leather case on it, just like I have on the 6. And with the Apple leather case, grip is perfectly fine. I had no issues with like feeling like I was going to drop it at all. One-handedness was obviously not great. In my limited usage of it during this few days, it didn't really come up. It wasn't really a problem. Once the watch comes out, it'll be even less of a problem because there'll be less need to use it one-handed. We'll see.
Another size piece of glass. Like, it's really like it's this continuum from like from the big piece of glass to the smallest. And it's like, how many sizes in between do I need? Can I eliminate a device by having a really, really tiny one and then a bigger gap and then a bigger one? Or like, what is the right number of pieces of glass sizes from small to big? And what you're describing, Marco, is the shuffling of the structure of that internally. And now all of a sudden there's going to be a new tiny piece of glass coming in. And you're like, that may let me make my other piece of glass bigger because the small one will fit in. And it's all just about like how big is the little light up picture that I'm seeing and how many of those little pictures do I have to carry around with me? And I think the other aspect of this is that it's not really just a bunch of interchangeable different size pieces of glass, because to a degree that is still slightly uncomfortable, these are separate devices. And yes, iCloud, and yes, you know, the web and email and Twitter and things being, and you know, all that business that tries to make them feel kind of like the same thing, but they're not. Like, it's not synchronized to the degree where you're like, this is just a differently sized window into my world digital crap. A lot of it's like that, but maybe a game is installed here and not there. Well, maybe you can't play a game here and not there. Maybe this thing has an app that thing doesn't. Maybe if I edit a document over here, I got to wait for it to sync over there. Maybe from the middle, you know, with handoff in between them, and then the gap between iPad and phone, and the gap between the iOS devices and the Mac. We just need to fast forward like 300 years, because like this, I can see where this is going, and we're not quite there yet, and also frustrating.
All I know is Mike Hurley is going to be intolerable after hearing this.
Oh, I know. It's well, because like, you know, because I'm connected. They're like, does Steven have one too? Steven, you're in the chat. Do you have one too? And I know Federico has been trying a 6 Plus. Mike has had one since it came out. And Mike's been telling them all, oh, the 6 Plus is the best. And they all didn't believe him. And now Federico is basically converted. Steven, yeah, he did too. So Steven, are you converted too? I think he also said that he like respected it and appreciated it.
Just watch what's going to happen when the watch comes, because that's going to screw up everybody's lineup of little glass squares or rectangles, rather.
Real-time follow-up, Stephen Hackett said he had a loaner, but he will be going for the larger phone the next time.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the year of all of us realizing that the big screen stuff is good. I got my... Oh, and this was yet another trip. Again, last week, I'm saying, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll go with the smaller screen on my next laptop to get a small laptop. And then I take this trip where I'm working on my slides until the last minute, of course, because I always am. And I'm like, man, I am so glad I have this big screen. On the plane, on the way home, I'm working on Overcast and Xcode. I'm like, man, I'm so glad I have this 15-inch laptop. So I think this is the year where I admit to myself that even though the small stuff is all sexy, I actually enjoy using the bigger stuff more. So
you were just saying how it's not so long ago, I think both of you were saying that if Apple made a 4-inch version of the iPhone, the next version of the iPhone, you might consider getting it instead of the 6 size. So you've gone totally, not only getting used to the 6, but saying, in fact, you'll go possibly in the other direction. So the market for, do you think there's still a market for a smaller size of iPhone or no? Just based on, I mean, for you, obviously not. You see, you're not going to buy one, but do you think Apple should still make one?
I honestly don't know. They could sell it. I mean, you know, people would buy it.
Who would buy it?
Besides John Gruber? I don't know.
Would he still buy it? Like, it could be that just like through sort of indoctrination by forcing everyone in the Apple, you know, everyone who wants a new iPhone being forced, this is the smallest one you can get, just deal with it for a year. And then, you know, like we said, it could be that you go back to the old size and it seems ridiculously small to you. I still find the 6, again, not so much in the hand, but as you said, in the pocket, just my plain old 6. How long have I had it now? A couple months?
Yeah.
In the pocket, I still feel like, man, I remember my other one was not such a hassle in my pocket. In usage, fine. I'm okay with it. In the pocket, it feels small. But of course, I have all these iPod Touch running around the house, and I pick them up and I say, the pocket, you know, it's worth it to deal with the pocket thing to, you know.
Exactly. It's always a trade-off, right? And that's with the 6 Plus. Like, it's a trade-off. It is significantly bigger in the pocket. It is harder to use one-handed than the 4-inch phone. I don't necessarily think it's harder to use one-handed than the 6. I would say compared to the 6, it's about the same. Like, I really don't think it's harder to use than the 6. And because, you know, either way, like, you're not reaching the whole screen. Either way, you're changing your grip in such a way that you got to kind of like have like this wide claw and kind of hover over things. Like, that's fine. when I was going for the trip, I have two unlocked phones now. I have the 5S and the 6 Plus, and I charged up both, and I launched. I have all my stuff on both, and I played with the 5S for a few minutes, and it was just too tiny. Like, I loved how tiny it felt in my hand, but when I tried to do anything on it, I loved how I could reach everything, but like, it was just, I felt cramped. I felt like I had no screen space, and that was even before I was used to the 6 Plus. Now that I'm used to the 6 Plus, the 6 almost feels that way. You know, it's all about what you're used to. And the 6 Plus does have a better camera, not by a huge amount, but it is better because of the image stabilization. So it has a better camera and a significantly longer battery life. Those are pretty big advantages. So combine that with the screen space advantage, and it might be worthwhile to me. I don't know. We shouldn't rule things out because of what we're accustomed to, because that, you know, it's all relative. That can all change. We said only a few months ago that they should really make a smaller phone. But in reality, once I'm used to the 6 now, the 6 feels fine. Like, it's still, I still think that the physical design of them being these slippery blobs is horrible. But once I put Apple leather cases on them, they became great. I'm fine with them now. You know, once I put the leather case on, it's fine. It's great. I like it a lot. And same thing, like the watch, I was hoping to go with 38 because I don't like big chunky watches. But I think, you know, but then I have a fit issue. But also, the 42 millimeter watch will have substantially better battery life. Apple has said it themselves. We don't know by how much, but it's going to have better battery life, and that's going to matter on first generation smartwatches. So again, you know, going a little bit bigger than I would normally be comfortable with, but it's bringing advantages, so it's a trade-off that's worth it. With the laptops, like, we think the 15 inch Retina MacBook Pro is this big heavy laptop. But compared to the 15-inch PowerBook I bought when I first converted to Macs in 2004, this thing is light. Like, it's 4.5 pounds. That one was almost 6. So that's a pretty substantial reduction in weight proportionally. It's much thinner. It's way faster, of course, and has all these better capabilities. We're now saying, oh my God, this brand new MacBook, which is 2.0 pounds, is amazing. The 11-inch MacBook Air is 2.26 or something, 2.2 something, right? So, like, it's not that much lighter than the 11-inch MacBook Air, but we're saying, oh my God, we're willing to give up so much to get this, and the other ones now feel really heavy. It's all relative. It's all what you're used to. You know, making any kind of absolute declaration about something being too big or too small or too heavy or not the right size for you, that can change over time based on what you're used to, and it can change over shorter time spans than you might expect.
I just want to point out that you were complaining about all this fall about the MacBook sizing, and then you took the opportunity in the after show to discuss big iPhones, a topic that I believe has been covered more than adequately by the show. And I'm not complaining. I am in support of you doing that. Why? Just because we've talked about something before doesn't mean there isn't more to say about the topic.
Oh, goodness. All right, are we done?
Oh, we're never done. Thanks a lot, everybody.
All right, let's do some titles before we sign off.
Oh my God, that was great.
I can do significantly bigger in the pocket.
Caseless.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah, look who submitted that
one. Not to say it's bad, but it's pretty rough.
No, we're not doing list puns as titles. It's like that's the Syracuse County of Casey. List puns.
Yeah, I like going into the black hole.
We are going to do Marco Polo someday when Marco plays polo.
I don't even know what I know. It's like a type of shirt, and there's some kind of like stupid sport that it is. But I don't even know what the sport.
You don't know what the polo is? This is like the ultimate achievement in things that Marco doesn't know about, or like references you don't get. I made a reference to a sport that you don't know.
Oh, Marco!
Wait, I'm now reading this Wikipedia article on polo. That
you're learning what polo is. Everyone in the chat room knows what polo is, right? It's not. I'm not the only person.
Yeah, it's a rich people sport.
Yeah.
Is it like croquet on horses? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, yes. Basically.
Yes.
That's stupid. Why would you do this?
Because rich people, Marco.
I don't understand how you got to this age without knowing what polo is.
It has never occurred to me to even look it up.
I've never seen polo in real life, but I know it's a thing that exists. Same like highlight.
Oh my God, the field is huge.
Well, they're horses. You can't put them on like a little basketball court.
You see this combination, this diagram of a football field and then a polo field.
Yeah, they're horses. They're big legs. They run.
My God. This seems like a ridiculous sport. Why would anybody do this?
Because you're really rich and you have horses.
Why would anybody have horses?
It beats like chasing a fox.
I guess, but I don't know. I mean, you have to start with the idea that it's okay to have horses mm-hmm. to just run around yeah, on. And that's that alone is a problem.
It looks really hard, too. Like, I mean, you got to swing that big thing while riding a horse alone is hard. And then swinging a thing and hitting a ball with the horse, it looks really hard.
Yeah, horses have terrible suspension. And I don't know. I mean, like, they're only one horsepower.